Hi, I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories outdoors. Support for this episode comes from Costa Sunglasses. Summer is on its way, and if you're anything like me, you're probably starting to dream about spending some time on the water, or at least near the water. Costa Sunglasses are made to help you make the most of your water time. The company was founded by a group of fishermen who wanted to stay on the water longer. To do that, they came up with technology for lenses that would cut through the glare, help you see below the surface, and bring out the beauty in what you're looking at. They engineered hinges that stand up to salt water, and they incorporated materials to enhance comfort and keep the frames in place where they belong. But the secret's out. Costas are not just for anglers. These days, you'll find them wherever you find people on the water. Find the frame that's perfect for your adventures at costasunglasses.com. That's C-O-S-T-A sunglasses.com. And of course, we have a link to that on our website as well. Costa Sunglasses. See what's out there. We so often hear about people who escape to nature as an antidote to stress. In those narratives, life is increasingly busy, and being in a place of tranquility helps us find some inner peace and quiet. But what if it isn't so clear-cut for everyone? What if some people need busier, more hectic urban environments? And not just for the career opportunities or the lifestyle, but in order to feel at peace. Today's episode draws us into one woman's realization that living in a big city might just be what her soul has been searching for all along. Alex Egerking tells her story.
Apparently, I've always been an energetic soul, wired to be restless since before I was born.
When I was pregnant with you, it felt like a little bit like I was possessed, if I could say that. Not in a bad way, but in a very different way.
That's my mum.
Being the second baby I'd had, it wasn't different in a physical sense to your sister. You know, you probably moved as much or kicked as much or, you know, twirled around as much. it was a far, far more subtle energy. It's like I guess sitting on a fast-moving train and you're looking out the window and everything's going on rather than, you know, watching a tree grow, which is a little bit, you know, very calming.
This fast-moving little train entered the world in Sydney, Australia. And right from the start, I seemed to have more energy than my surroundings. Sydney's a pretty big city with about 5 million people. But it's also kind of a relaxed city with a laid-back character. Outside of the inner city, it becomes suburban pretty quickly and sprawls outwards towards the beach, the bush, the plains, and the mountains. This is what it sounds like on the back veranda of my parents' house in a leafy suburb of Sydney where I grew up. And while I love the beach and the bush and the wildness you can stumble upon in Sydney, I've always considered myself a city slicker. Sure, I've occasional dreams of living on a farm or moving to a small coastal community. But deep down, I know there's something in me that needs a sea of humanity around me, a certain frenetic energy to feel at ease. I guess, looking back on my childhood and early adult life, I've always felt a little restless. Usually I try to deal with this restless feeling by doing lots of stuff. Growing up, I put my hand up to do everything I could. Debating, public speaking, 4 different sports a year, 2 different school bands, school plays. Yeah, I was that person. And as an adult, I became a lawyer, and it was a busy job. It wouldn't be unusual for me to work 10 to 15 hour days, sometimes even working all night and over weekends. Though, all this busyness usually wouldn't work out for me for very long. From time to time, my busyness would reach a frenzied point, and I would reach some breaking point and need some time out. I started to learn to manage my anxiety instead by slowing down a little, meditating, finding some open space or a slice of nature. Maybe that's why I've sometimes yearned to live on a farm in the middle of nowhere. It sounds like the kind of thing that might bring some long-term peace to my soul. But instead, I ended up doing the complete opposite. Around 4 years ago, my husband, Rhys, and I decided to move to New York. We had both travelled to New York before and fallen in love with it through our tourists' eyes. The first time I went, I spent 2 weeks exploring the city with a friend, in the middle of a snowy January, and it seemed impossibly magical to me, as it does to so many. I loved the subway. I loved how brutally efficient it was at ferrying people underneath the city. I loved the subway performers, like that Beatles cover band, the Needles, who played I Wanna Hold Your Hand to a rapturous crowd at Times Square Station. Though I guess that sounds kind of corny now. I loved how bars and restaurants filled up just about every block, and I loved how people filled these up. Even in the middle of winter, people were everywhere and lived their lives out and about. So when Rhys got the opportunity to relocate to New York with his job, I could not say yes quickly enough. But even though I had loved being a tourist in New York, I wasn't sure how I would go actually living there. I mean, it's a city that has energy. But on the flip side of that coin, all that energy breeds a certain restlessness and anxiety. And as a restless soul myself, prone to anxiety, how would I go in this hustling, anxious, built-up city? At the end of 2015, Rhys and I packed some clothes and sentimental items and uprooted our lives. We rented an apartment on 23rd Street in the middle of Manhattan. When I stepped out the front door of my apartment building, I stepped straight into a stream of human traffic, people hurrying here and there. I stepped into a constant hum of car and bus and siren traffic. In other words, I stepped into a constant assault on my senses. The first thing you notice, wherever you are in New York, is the sirens as they battle to make their way through slow-moving traffic. Then you notice the loud, in-your-face construction. Sidewalks are dug up constantly by men wielding jackhammers for reasons that remain largely a mystery to me. And even when you're underground, the noise doesn't stop. The subway, while brutally efficient, is also brutally noisy. From the very beginning, I was kind of obsessed with the noise of the city. Soon after we moved into our apartment, I sat in Chelsea Waterside Park on the Hudson River, and I wrote, "The Hudson lies in front of me, not dancing merrily in the sunlight like some rivers might, nor undulating peacefully like others, humming, pulsating, squirming to the harsh blades of helicopters chop past, one following another, trucks grinding through low gears, two helicopters, percussive hammering, large and loud and slow. Overall, some constant ringing. Is it in my head? Siren. shout, barking, and all the while the river pulsates to a rhythm that I can't quite discern in this glittering daytime disco, this New York symphony. But in a weird way, I found that New York didn't make me restless and anxious. It actually kind of matched my energy levels. It was as if the noise outside all around me every day met the noise inside my head and finally generated some sense of calm. I felt like I was making a home in a city where things were happening and where I was free to be whoever I wanted, and I was less restless than I'd felt in a long time. But even though I felt good, even if I felt calmer than I had in ages, after a while there was this little voice in my head that wondered whether living in all this chaos was actually a good idea in the long run. You know, like when you're out with friends and you're in the zone, you order that next drink, even though you know it might just be the one that'll make you wake up with a hangover. Lots of studies show that being around high noise levels for long periods of time is bad for you and can cause a bunch of different health problems. Hearing loss, high blood pressure, heart disease, sleep disorders. And New Yorkers are frequently exposed to excessive noise levels. What might all this noise be doing to me in the long run? As the months went on, I noticed that my brain was beginning to tune out all the noise I was surrounded by more and more. One time in particular, I was waiting at a set of traffic lights on 23rd Street, lost in thought as I often am. I started to feel some discomfort as a cavalcade of ear-splitting sirens penetrated through my reverie. Two ambulances sat right alongside me, sirens blaring, waiting for some traffic to give at the intersection. That piercing noise brought me back to myself. I realized, first of all, that I had been totally unaware of their approach. I mean, how do you not notice ambulance sirens blaring near you for minutes at a time? My second realization was that I was also standing right next to a construction zone where a crew of men in orange vests were jackhammering through the concrete sidewalk. I had managed to completely block this out. How? It concerned me. I mean, what was happening inside my brain that meant I could retreat so far inside myself? And if I'm being honest, there was a darker underside to the noise of the city that was pretty emotionally unsettling at times. Some sounds from New York life trigger potent memories wherever I am. Loud construction crashes take me back to the boom, that Saturday night in 2016 when a homemade bomb exploded just 1.5 avenue blocks from our Chelsea apartment. By some miracle, it killed no one, just shook our faith in our invincibility. And when I hear more sirens than usual, when they get more and more and louder, I start monitoring Twitter to see what tragedy has occurred nearby. It's because of afternoons like that one when Reese and I were home packing to go on vacation. It felt like we were swimming in a sea of sirens for 30 minutes, even from inside the apartment. Turns out, all those sirens were on their way to the West Side Highway, where a driver had plowed a pickup truck down a crowded bike path in a terrorist attack, killing 8 people. Events like these were, of course, pretty irregular, but they started to feel like part of the fabric of the city to me, and I feel shaken up when I think about them even now. More and more, I had to ask myself, should I choose to live in a place that is this full on? I might love this city and feel good here for the time being, but what might it be doing to me in the long run?
Hey, it's Willow. We'll hear the rest of Alex's story in a moment. But first, a word from our sponsors. Support for Out There comes from Think Outside. Think Outside is a monthly subscription box that will get your kids away from a screen and outside exploring nature. When you subscribe to Think Outside, your child will get a box in the mail each month full of gear and resources surrounding various different topics. For example, there's a box about first aid, a box that focuses on building shelters, a box about wildlife. So Think Outside actually sent me one of these boxes, and since I don't have kids of my own, I brought it over to a friend's house so her son Owen could try it out. Owen is 9. So what do we got here?
Trowel. A little flashlight. A wire saw.
In addition to gear, the box has a bunch of colorful cards and a little booklet that tell you how to do stuff in the woods, like build a shelter using just branches and moss. One item in particular in the box ended up sparking an immediate lesson from Owen's mom about leave no trace practices. It was this orange plastic trowel.
Do you know why you would want that trowel with you, Owen?
To bury stuff?
Yeah, like what?
Food?
What do people do about once a day? You can use the real words.
You're poop and pee?
Poop. Yeah. You could dig a hole and poop in it and bury it.
It is so disgusting.
Well, wouldn't it be more disgusting to come upon, like, a pile of human poop, like, on a hiking trail or at a campsite?
For $10 off your first box, head to thinkoutsideboxes.com and enter the coupon code OUTTHERE at checkout. That's thinkoutsideboxes.com, coupon code OUTTHERE. Support also comes from Life Without Plastic. With Earth Day coming up this weekend, many of you are probably thinking about things you might be able to do to help the planet. For example, maybe you're thinking about ways you could reduce waste or use less plastic in your everyday life. Life Without Plastic makes that easy. They're a one-stop shop for earth-friendly alternatives to plastic products. The company got started when the co-founders, Chantal and Jay, were expecting a baby. They had always considered themselves eco-aware and health-conscious, but once they started doing research for their baby-to-be, they began to come across disturbing studies about the impact of plastics. They started searching for an alternative to plastic baby bottles, but the only ones they could find were only available for wholesale, like you had to buy at least 1,000 units at a time. And it wasn't just plastic-free baby bottles that were hard to find. Jay and Chantal realized there were not many reliable places to buy plastic-free products in general. So they launched Life Without Plastic. They started by selling glass and stainless steel baby bottles and a few stainless steel food containers. Now, over a decade later, they offer more than 450 unique products for living life with less plastic. For 10% off your order, head to lifewithoutplastic.com and enter the coupon code OUTTHERE at checkout. Again, that's lifewithoutplastic.com, coupon code OUTTHERE. And now, back to the story.
Almost 3 years into living in New York, I found out I was pregnant with our first child. The first time I really wondered what impact noise might have on this tiny human growing inside me had nothing really to do with living in New York. I've been a drummer since I was a little kid, and I was drumming in a punk band, the Vomms, when I fell pregnant. Think short, fast, and loud. Especially loud. We were playing gigs at least monthly and rehearsing more often. I figured I would probably have to give it up in the later stages of pregnancy, but was it okay to expose Lizard to this much noise as it was developing? To clarify, Lizard is our child's in utero name. Yeah, it's kind of a long story. One day, early on, I asked my obstetrician whether I could keep drumming for a while. She just looked at me and said, "Honey, you live in New York.
It's probably worse for you to stand in front of an ambulance siren than it is to play the drums. Trust me, baby will love the music. I'm still not 100% sure she got that I played brash, in-your-face punk rock in divey bars with bad acoustics, but I took it as the approval I was looking for to keep playing for a while. But her comment did get me thinking about what living in the middle of New York could do to Lizard. Not so much in the womb, I was pretty satisfied that New York's noise pollution wouldn't stunt the baby's growth. But what would life be like for her or him, spending their formative years in the middle of all this noise? It would be different to my childhood, for sure. But lots of people raise kids in tiny New York apartments and take their kids for walks down noisy, congested, siren-filled avenues and live next to subway stations or above-ground train lines. It would be fine for us, right? I guess we all have our own very personal calculus when we decide where to call home. In the end, we decided to move back to Sydney to have the baby, and that's where I am right now, recording this. And no, we didn't end up moving just to get away from noisy New York. We want to be close to our families. We want a strong support network around us as our lives turn upside down and we adjust to living on a baby's schedule for a while. And yeah. Life in Sydney is pretty nice for starting a family. But I was apprehensive because I didn't know how I would go adjusting again to a lower energy city. Would my restlessness return? As I record this, 6 weeks after returning to Sydney, I haven't had Little Lizard yet. Though I may have by the time you hear this episode. I can report that I do have some renewed appreciation for living in a slower, lower-key city with easier access to quiet spaces, the beach, the harbour, the bush. And although the garbage truck outside my window and noise from the pub across the street interrupts my sleep, I don't worry about what noise pollution might be doing to me here. But I can also report that my restlessness has returned a little. I'm so glad to be here for a lot of reasons, but I do feel that same old anxious, breathless energy some days, that feeling that I just didn't seem to feel in the middle of New York's intense vibrations. I can shake the feeling momentarily by getting out for a walk by the harbour or the park, by heading to the beach, by meditating, but it returns. I am curious to see how motherhood will affect the equation. Who knows, maybe having a tiny human to keep alive will more than account for my excess energy. And I'm sure in time I'll find ways of creating my own noisy vibrations here. Hopefully I'll find a new punk band to drum with, and maybe a screaming baby will approximate an ambulance siren and feel strangely soothing to my soul. But also, maybe I'll never feel quite at peace here. Maybe I'll never be able to shake the feeling that my soul wasn't made to take in calm, quiet sunrises, but instead to tumble around in some bigger, more bustling metropolis. I feel like we so often think that we need peace and quiet to feel calm. I have certainly thought this over the years. But I'm not sure it's so clear-cut for everyone. Don't get me wrong, I feel cleansed by a week away spent relaxing on a beachside vacation, and I feel replenished by a day spent hiking in the mountains. But I think I know now that moving to my imaginary remote farm, the one that sounded so idyllic to me over the years, won't actually give me that sense of being at ease that I'm looking for in the long run.
That was Alex Eggerking. She happens to also be the marketing and business development director for Out There. And as she mentioned in her story, she now lives in Sydney, Australia with her husband, Reese. And in case you were wondering, Alex does not feel possessed by Little Lizard the way her mom did when she was pregnant. But Lizard definitely seems like a high-energy baby in the womb. Alex sent me this recording a little while ago, which is apparently typical of what happens when she's trying to go to bed in the evening.
Oh, it's little foot. Ah! Oh my goodness. What are you doing, crazy alien baby? It's definitely like a total foot over here doing a jig. Seriously, feel that.
Wow.
It's responding. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Oh. You just know it's bedtime, don't you? You know that I'm lying down reading a book trying to go to sleep. Why do you look so gleeful? That smile on your face.
Come on, keep running.
Reese is provoking the baby.
Alex and Reese, I'm wishing you all the best as you bring this tiny human into the world. I have no doubt that you're going to be wonderful parents. Before you go, I wanted to give you a quick update about what's going on behind the scenes here at Out There. Back in January, we set a goal for ourselves. We wanted to have a wider array of stories and a wider array of storytellers on the show. We received a flood of emails in response to that, and I'm happy to say that we currently have multiple episodes in the works that are by and about people from more diverse backgrounds. I am so excited to share these stories with you in the coming months. I think you're really going to like them. Obviously, this is just a first step. There's a lot more that needs to be done to make Out There as inclusive as we want it to be. We promise to keep working hard to make the show a welcoming place for producers and stories of all stripes. If you have a story idea for Out There, please pitch us. All the info for how to do that is on our website, outtherepodcast.com, under the Contact tab. We realize that economic factors can present real barriers to making a show like Out There diverse. We're an independent production on a shoestring budget, which means we typically can't pay producers anywhere near what they deserve. But we also recognize that not everyone can afford to work for pennies, and we don't want money, or lack thereof, to prevent you from telling your story. If you feel you would bring an underrepresented perspective to the show, let us know when you pitch us. We will do our best to pay you more than our usual rates, if at all possible. A big thank you to Stephen Marino, Rob Landicho, Jerry Laughlin, Mike Lutters, and Deb and Vince Garcia for their financial contributions to Out There. Gifts like these make this show possible. If you would like to make a contribution of your own, head over to outtherepodcast.com and click support. That's it for this episode. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Eggerking. Our advertising coordinator is Jessica Taylor. Laura Johnston heads up our ambassador program, and our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. We'll see you in 2 weeks, and in the meantime, have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.